Good morning, folks. July 9th. Suppose they're going to have a lot of rain headed this way this over the next several days, so be careful as you travel about. We've got a great show lined up for you today. We'll visit with Rafael Goyeneche, president of Metropolitan Crime Commission. We will talk about this continuing saga, the indictment of Louisiana Attorney General Liz Murrell. We'll talk about the updates and what's going on. We'll also talk about some federal court cases, as well as Tanzanika Ruffin. And also we'll talk briefly about the MCC Awards luncheon that's coming up and with Rafi Goyeneche. Brandon Buck joins us, research fellow in foreign policy studies at the Cato Institute. The Iran conflict is again going strong, the president calling Iranians scum, and obviously he seems to have lost his patience, and it's waning quickly with the delay game that they're playing and the lies and everything else. It'll be interesting to see where we go from here. At the top of the 11 o'clock hour, Michelle Schlafly, secretary of the Mid-City Neighborhood Association Board, will talk about the demolition of the former Lindy Boggs Medical Center, which is finally set to begin. What does this long-awaited milestone mean for Mid-City residents? At 10:30, we will visit with Christy App with our Port of New Orleans segment, Chief Commercial Officer, Port of New Orleans, as well as Captain Henry Peterson, president of the Associated Branch Pilots. We'll talk about just what goes on the river and hope to talk about the activity, what it means, how it works, the importance of same with two folks intimately involved with the commerce and all of the movement of vessels and everything else on the mighty Mississippi. Okay. We're going to talk more about this as it relates to a timeline with Rafi Goyeneche in the 12 o'clock hour. But there was a recusal by all the judges in criminal district court relative to the motions that are going to be filed by the Louisiana Attorney General Liz Murrell on the 16-count indictment, 8 counts of public intimidation, 8 counts of malfeasance in office. And I got to read this order of recusal. It's truly out of the ordinary. It's an attack on a lawyer. And it's interesting what this judge actually has to say. We are definitely off the rails here. And this recusal collection of words makes no sense, and it's cuckoo, and it is a kangaroo court, and this judge is actually making the case that his court's a kangaroo court. So, and I'll read it, the order of recusal. This matter comes before the court pursuant to a sua sponte motion to recuse Judge Leon Roche for the foregoing reasons. This court will recuse itself from the above entitled case. The defendant in this matter is represented by Mrs. Laura Canizera Rodrigue. Mrs. Canizera, upon her retention by the defendant, immediately began her representation by spreading vicious falsehoods and derogatory remarks aimed at this court and the citizenry of New Orleans at large. Mrs. Canizera gave a public interview on the front steps of this courthouse where she called the criminal district court in New Orleans a kangaroo court. Appropriate. This court believes her remarks were a violation of the model rules of professional conduct 3.5D, 8.2, 8.4C, 8.4D. Such language undermines the people's confidence in the criminal district court. Mrs. Canizera chose to attack the impartiality and credibility of the very court she practiced in as an assistant district attorney under her father, former Orleans Parish District Attorney Leon Canizera. Additionally, Mrs. Canizera has spread many falsehoods and outright fabrications of the truth about this honorable judge in public interviews and through her social media platform titled Bayou Mama Bears. Her animus towards this court is clearly evident from her persistent lies, ad hominem attacks, which she continues to spew in public. Mrs. Cannizzaro has attacked the integrity of the lawfully assembled grand jury, which consisted of everyday citizens of New Orleans who sacrificed their time and energy for the last 6 months to do the work of all citizens of New Orleans without pay. These are the same New Orleanians that she has denigrated and asked to be investigated. The same New Orleanians that Governor Jeff Landry has now asked Louisiana State Police to investigate. This was one of the precise reasons the court had to protect the grand juror's anonymity from the media for fear of unlawful retaliation and harassment against them from their own governor and attorney general. Mrs. Cannizzaro falsely claimed that members of the grand jury committed a crime by spreading to the media and revealing information from the grand jury. These allegations are meritless and not based on any good faith belief or proof. Not a single media outlet reported that their source was a member of the grand jury. Nevertheless, Ms. Cannizzaro falsely asserted in an interview to WWL, you have members of the grand jury leaking information to the public, and the media reported this information was coming straight from a grand juror. Again, more mistruths and more denigration of the grand jurors and the legal process by Mrs. Cannizzaro in a violation of the model rules of professional conduct. Mrs. Cannizzaro claims that she was not let into the court to raise her issues about the indictment. This is yet another mistruth because she, in fact, did come into the courtroom and asked to make a record, but this was after the court was already adjourned for the day. The court reporter and the staff from Section I was on their way out of the door when Mrs. Cannizzaro came into the courtroom wanting to make a record. She arrived late, but instead claimed to the public that she was prevented from making a record, another mistruth. Mrs. Cannizzaro repeatedly insinuated something nefarious happened in the court because the media was not allowed in during the reading of the indictment, another pernicious insinuation aimed at eroding the public's trust in the criminal justice system. Everything that was conducted surrounding the reading and assembly of the grand jury was conducted in open court, as the law defines that term to mean. A transcript was taken of everything that happened during these proceedings by a court reporter, and the judge was on the bench, thereby upholding the mandate of open court. For the above reasons, and because this court values the right of a defendant to retain counsel of their choice, but in an abundance of caution and to avoid the appearance of impropriety, Section I will recuse itself from this matter under Louisiana Criminal Code of Criminal Procedure, Article 671. It is hereby ordered that the case 701870 be randomly allotted to another section of court, excluding Section I, for the adjudication of defendant's case. Now, if you want to talk about deflection, this is classic deflection. Not a single media outlet reported that their source was a member of the grand jury. When was the last time that you recall a member of the media, myself included, that reveals their sources? They say they have sources. They don't ever reveal their sources. They're not compelled, for the most part, to reveal their sources. So he's like having you, trying to have you believe that this is out of the ordinary because not any of them have revealed their sources. But let's just forget for a moment that everybody had been talking about this for 2 days prior to the return of the indictment, that Liz Murrell was under investigation by a grand jury. How did that work? How did that happen? Well, there's a multiple ways that it could happen. One being that grand jurors shared it with maybe somebody in their family who called the media. Maybe they shared it with somebody else who spoke out of order. Maybe a whole lot of different things happened. But obviously, this is all a concoction by Mrs. Cannizzaro, right? That can be the only logical conclusion. And it's not a denigration of the grand jury, because how many grand jury returns do we actually hear specifically about the target, who and what crimes that they're going to be indicted for? I heard about it before the indictment ever came down. I started hearing rumblings early Thursday morning, and I'm told there were others hearing rumblings as early as Tuesday. I hadn't talked to all the other members of the media, but I've talked to people that had been hearing about this since Tuesday. Nobody believed it, but how did it get out of the grand jury? Right? And again, When's the last time that in a media story, part of the story and part of their response is they told you who their source was? Really? He must think that we are idiots, right? Now, what's also interesting here is that his interpretation of open court. Because the fact of the matter is, a lot of what he says in this recusal order is addressed in the stay of the Louisiana Supreme Court. By all public accounts, the Orleans Parish Criminal District Court, and this is a quote from the stay order of the Louisiana Supreme Court, by all public accounts, the Orleans Parish Criminal District Court violated express provisions of state law requiring that grand jury returns occur in the public eye in open court, Louisiana Code of Criminal Procedure, Article 383. Numerous media outlets have stated that reporters were handcuffed and removed from these otherwise public proceedings. So he attacks Mrs. Cannizzaro for talking about this, denigrating the process of the Orleans Parish Grand Jury, when our own Louisiana Supreme Court says that this is not acceptable and that his interpretation of an open court is not founded. But this is what we're dealing with. He just thinks that, you know, it's my interpretation and that's what it's going to be. And this is how it's going to work. Again, contrary to what he's talking about in here, this is just simply a character assassination and talking about the Mrs. Cannizzaro's animus towards this court is clearly evident from her persistent lies and ad hominem attacks on what was going on. He also says that and talks about the governor, Jeff Landry, and what he intends to do. So what's interesting is this judge happened to make what purports to be a Facebook posting that I have access to and that I reviewed probably 10 times last evening as to what he said. And the most compelling thing is he was talking about how his judgeship was saved because there was obviously a deal cut in conference committee. It turns out, and I didn't know this until just recently, that his cousin is Senator Gary Carter, right? And in this Facebook video, what he says, he went through a long explanation about his cousin never spoke up for him. His cousin had no influence because he wasn't on the committee that actually heard those bills. Well, the truth be told, what he didn't tell you in the spirit of transparency is that his cousin, Senator Gary Carter, had been on the committee and had recently resigned from the committee. So every state legislator that I talked to all knew that Leon Roche's cousin was Senator Gary Carter. Now, he has the audacity to try and make this to people believe that that had no influence at all in conference committee as it relates to he was the one that was going to be saved. In fact, in the video, he said, and he tells this story about how he has this chain with a cross on it. And when he was watching all of the iterations of these competing bills from different legislators, and I will remind you that originally they were going to cut 15 judges from a number of courts, and it ended up being 9, that he started praying. And then actually God spared his seat. His cousin had nothing to do with it. His cousin had been on that committee. He doesn't tell you that. And he goes on to say, interestingly, because he contradicts himself and says that this was all a Republican conspiracy to turn Democrats against Democrats. That Governor Landry was in control of this whole situation, and that the Republicans actually were the ones that chose him for whatever reason. And he can't explain what that is. He's concerned, obviously, because Rhonda Good Douglas said that she was going to run against him. She had announced she was unhappy about the outcome here, and she said, I intend to run against Judge Leon Roche in the fall. And I suspect that's when this purported Facebook posting took place right after that. It's him sitting in front of a camera talking. So God spared his seat. Now, the most compelling thing about what he says is he says, I'm not the bad guy in this courtroom because my seat was spared. I feel bad for Judge Good. She's a good lady. I practice in her court. She ran a good court. But I'm not the bad guy. Jeff Landry is. Senator Morris is. And guess who else, folks? Before all of this brouhaha came up with the grand jury, Laura Cannizzaro is. Laura Cannizzaro is a lawyer, and a lawyer that handles some civil matters for the AG. I don't know that she's ever passed legislation, but now she is. And I suspect that the whole motivation for his recusal is to try and sanitize himself from what his spoken word, that obviously he has animus, he has prejudice, and he has bias as it relates to Laura Cannizzaro. Because he's not the bad guy in this. Laura Cannizzaro is. And this is before any of this ever took place in his court. He's obviously blaming Republicans, the governor. The only one he left out of here was Liz Murrell. He goes on to say that he's not going to let Judge Good's situation be used as a weapon against him. I don't know who's trying to use it as a weapon other than Judge Good saying she's going to run for your seat. I mean, that's the big concern here. You're not going to get a free ride. She said she's running for your seat unless there's some other political deal that's going to be cut, like the political deal that saved your seat. Because I'm told that this was all about the consideration for your cousin, Senator Gary Carter, as to how you were in fact saved. And if you believe that anybody else is going to believe that's not the case, I don't know what to say about you. Maybe the only other logical explanation, I guess, was divine intervention. Some way, somehow, your name got picked from the hat. And then when Governor Jeff Landry talked about how he was upset by the fact that we didn't adhere to the LIFO method and that Judge Good was sacrificed in this and he was unhappy about it, you write that off as being part of the conspiracy, and this is all about misdirection. What? You also say in this video there was never any reason given for the judges being cut. Well, there's a whole bunch of reasons given You may not agree with it, but there were a whole bunch of reasons given for the judges being cut. This is something that's been contemplated since the early 1970s. And because of the political power that the city held over all these years, those that wanted to make sure that New Orleans would be treated like all other parishes were able to beat back those attempts. But no more. I go back to the famous words of Democrats: elections have consequences. So I believe the important part that the judge left out of his recusal order, contrary to what, you know, where the Louisiana Supreme Court is telling him he's wrong in his dealings, not to mention all of the problems that exist with Ms. White's appointment. Looks like she doesn't even live in Orleans Parish. In the Constitutional Article, Section 5, Subsection 26, you stand in the stead of the district attorney. No district attorney or assistant district attorney shall appear, plead, or in any way defend or assist in defending any criminal prosecution or charge. A violation of this paragraph shall be cause for removal. In the month of June, the month that she was appointed special prosecutor, she was representing criminal defendants in criminal district court and appearing on their behalf in the sections of court. Judge Roche, in his brilliance, did no due diligence. So this is a little bit of the pot calling the kettle black, right? You know, the judge is upset in his recusal order. He wants to single out Ms. Cannizzaro, saying, you know, all of this, most of which the Supreme Court has addressed and said, doesn't look good. And we believe that the AG is going to prevail on this. And that's why they stepped in and issued the stay of this case. And then they insisted on going forward with an arrest, which, again, stupid is as stupid does. And we don't think there's bias. We're days before this, probably somewhere around 3 weeks. I don't know. It's conjecture on my part. So let me just clear that up. You're saying you're not the bad guy. Jeff Landry is. So you think you might be biased towards the state of Louisiana? Senator Morris, the state legislature, you might have a bias with them. And Laura Cannizzaro, you think maybe? I mean, you just pulled her out of left field, that you might have a bias against them? So in the end, what I hope is that all of this goes to the Judiciary Commission. Actually, what I would prefer is that the Louisiana Supreme Court stand up and do the right thing and refer this themselves on their own order. Because this is craziness, what's going on here. Absolute craziness. And we continue to have these situations. And why this is playing out this way is because somebody somewhere in this process wants a pound of flesh. But where they went wrong is you don't do this in a grand jury. Not ever. And every time the DAs, federal prosecutors, U.S. attorneys, or other use the grand jury for something less than honorable, they should be removed. We'll be right back. Welcome back, folks. We are, we've got quite the task, actually, in this half hour, because we're going to talk about the river that never sleeps, the people, the infrastructure that keeps Louisiana economy moving. And I can tell you every day is a learning day for me about what goes on in the river. So we're going to try and cover a bunch of different things in a half hour, which is literally, I guess, partially almost impossible because of all of what they do. But we're joined by Christy App, Chief Commercial Officer, Port of New Orleans, as well as Captain Henry Peterson, President of the Associated Branch Pilots. Folks, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Noel.
Good morning, Noel. Thank you for having us.
Thank you, Captain. All right, let's jump in because we got a lot to cover. Let's just talk first about river pilots, what they are. Folks think about pilots on an airplane, but let's talk about what it is that river pilots do.
Hey, good morning, Noel. Again, I'm with the Bar Pilots, and we're responsible for piloting ships in and out of the Southwest Pass, the Mississippi River, and we work closely with the ship's crews and their captains to safely navigate deep drive ships in and out of the Mississippi River and safely move over 500 million tons of cargo a year in and out of the Mississippi River port system. This is the largest and most complex port system in the world. When you combine the five different port authorities, and with that amount of cargo moving, unfortunately, it does prevent a lot of challenges. So it's our job to mitigate risk and make sure that everything can move as efficiently and smoothly as possible.
I will tell you, Captain, I rode with the Crescent Pilots on a cruise ship. And I have been looking for that opportunity for a number of years. I did it several years back when cruise ships first started here in the Port of New Orleans. We left on a Sunday afternoon. First off, the levees look like a speed bump on a road. And you're going down the river, I don't know, 18, 19, maybe 20 knots. I mean, you're hauling, right? We left. It was beautiful sun. We ran into a thunderstorm where we couldn't even see the bow of the ship. And later, we ran in, by the time we got to Pilot Town, we were in fog. And when I went to get out of the ship to get into the tender, I didn't realize exactly how rough the river was. And we had to jump and time our jump onto the tender. And when they told me what I had to do, I said, "What, are you kidding? Are you out of your mind?" Yeah, but we did it. And we didn't break a bone, so we felt pretty good about that accomplishment. I've had several people tell me, "I don't know what these guys do." I said, "Well, let me tell you what they do." First off, I would have never have believed it, right? And it couldn't have been staged any better. But the reality is that ship, the size of these vessels, and I mean, you know, cruise ships are probably the safest of all the ships that you guys pilot down that river. You tell me if I'm wrong. I've seen some, you know, we passed a bunch of ships. I don't know that I would trust much. So, I mean, you don't control the equipment itself and the maintenance of it, but you got to make the best of all of that. And I can tell you, I have a newfound respect for river pilots as a result of my experience, because it was hairy. That one little afternoon got a taste of everything, quite frankly. It was interesting. But it was, I understand now more than ever.
Yes, you're exactly right, Noel. Every day, every transit's different, whether it's traffic, weather. A lot of planning goes into before we step on board a ship. We board in the Gulf of America, so it gets certainly pretty rough out there. Sometimes it's anywhere from 6 to 10 foot seas. So it's not uncommon to have to board in pretty dangerous conditions. Unfortunately, just after January of this year, there was a pilot in Panama City, Florida, who was disembarking in the Gulf, and he unfortunately passed away when he fell off the ladder. So it is extremely dangerous. It's not something that we take lightly. And as Christy can attest to, because she's ridden with us before as well, it's something that is can be pretty eye-opening when you do it for the first time.
Christy?
Yeah, I agree. I agree, Noel. It was funny. I So I've always told people, I said, I'm not necessarily scared of heights, but I am scared of plunging to my death. When you're climbing up and, you know, when you're boarding those ships, especially out in the Gulf, the weather conditions, the sea conditions, you know, that doesn't stop the pilots from working. They board in all conditions. So it really is humbling to be able to get onto and off of those ships and really see, you know, just the quality of skill that all our pilots have here along the river to weather those conditions and to continue to deliver commerce in and out of the river under those circumstances.
And the training to do this is extensive, right? There's special schools, there's apprenticeship programs that you have to go through, and extensive testing to get through in order to become a pilot, right?
That's correct, Newell. Every group is different. There's approximately 60 pilot associations in the United States. However, with us, it's essentially from start to finish, in best case scenario, roughly about a 10-year process from when they have to go to a maritime college and then receive a U.S. Coast Guard license and work in the maritime industry. And then our apprenticeship is a several year long process that culminates in that last year, where a training pilot works alongside a state commission pilot and pilots over 1,000 ships in that single year. So in that last year, they get to see every single type of ship that comes into the river, day or night, different types of traffic patterns and situations, all different types of weather situations. You get pretty much everything thrown at you in that year. And then one of the big things, too, is to realize that right now there is no maritime program like that at the college level in Louisiana. However, the Louisiana Maritime Academy associated with Nicholls University is scheduled to come online in 2028. So that'll be a fantastic asset for the state.
Yeah, I believe a number of pilots go to Texas schools. There are some East Coast schools and some European schools as well, right?
Yes, sir. That's correct.
Let's pivot real quick. Dredging. Let's talk about that, the importance of dredging in the river and why it has to happen.
Yeah, so dredging,
right, Christy.
Go ahead.
Go ahead, Henry.
Yeah, so dredging's crucial for the Mississippi River. As you know, a lot of sediment comes down the Mississippi River, specifically in Southwest Pass. Sometimes dredging is occurring year-round. Right now, we have four dredges down there working as we speak. And it's vital to maintain the depth of the channel. They kind of say that we need the three R's: reliability, resilience, and redundancy. And we have to keep the channel dredged in order to maintain that reliability and confidence in the shipping industry that they can bring their ships to the Mississippi River and they'll be able to get them in and out with the desired cargo. The other thing that a lot of people don't realize with dredging is the part that plays with coastal restoration. Since 2009, they've created over 16,000 acres of land through beneficial use of dredged material. That's material that they dredged out of the ship channel and dredged ashore. So it's been a huge asset to being able to create land and protect our coast as well.
Yeah. Let's pivot to anchorages, where these vessels ultimately end up parking along the river, Christy, and how important that is to maintaining the economy of the river and have it move efficiently.
Yeah, so the anchorages are a unique sort of commercial advantage that the Mississippi River has in comparison to other Gulf ports. You look at anchorages much like you look like a federally Coast Guard designated parking spot. up the river. And what those present to, especially from a commercial perspective, is the opportunity for a lot of our grain shippers, our refineries as well, to bring ships up from the sea buoy to stage them in these anchorages and then be able to get them to the docks quicker. You look at places like Houston, you know, you would have to come in, say you're at the sea buoy, you come into the Houston Ship Channel, and there's really no place for them to go. So if there's, whether it's you know, a staging or whatnot, sometimes you then have to turn around and then go back out into the Gulf. So these anchorages really present us with a commercial advantage to be able to get these ships to our refineries docks, our grain shippers docks, and have them moving back out of the river and into global commerce.
All right, we got to get to a break. When we come back, we'll continue this conversation with Christy App, Chief Commercial Officer, Port of New Orleans, as well as Captain Henry Peterson, President of the Associated Branch Pilots. Stay with us. All right, we're back, folks. Let's go to Captain Henry Peterson, President of the Associated Branch Pilots. From your perspective, Cap, and what is really so important about the Mississippi?
Yeah, it's a great question, Noel. I mean, 60% of the United States' grain exports come out of the Mississippi River. Right now, roughly about 20% of the U.S. production of LNG comes out of the Mississippi River. So it's very clear that the Mississippi River is paramount to farmers in the Midwest. And when they export out of here, they need to know that their shipments are going to be able to be shipped out on time and on schedule. And then most importantly, as we've seen recently with disruptions related to the Russia and Ukraine war and the Strait of Hormuz, that has only more solidified the strategic importance of the Mississippi River and what we do here on a daily basis.
Yeah, it's we're going to revisit this, Christy, again, because there's so much more information and I think the public would love to hear about what the activities are on the river and the impact that it has on our economy. So I'll have my producer reach out to y'all because I really do want to finish up on this topic, and hopefully y'all can accommodate us in that request. Thank y'all so much for joining us today. We truly appreciate it, and have a great weekend.
Thank you, Noel.
All righty, we'll be right back. 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text Line. Stay with us.